Welcome to the Meat and Poultry Podcast. This podcast is your online portal to hear from experts in the industry about the latest news, trends, technologies, and people in the world of meat and poultry processing.
For the Meat Poultry Podcast, I'm Ryan McCarthy, Digital Media Editor. Over the last few years, Chomps has continued to grow into a steady player of the meat snack space. One of the key components of its success is its detail on operations and finding the right partners to produce a quality product. For this episode of the Meat and Poultry Podcast, we talk with Rashid Ali, Co-Chief Executive Officer, and Zach Meyer, Senior Director of Operations. During this discussion, Rashid takes us through what it's been like to watch Chomps grow and succeed with his co-founder, Pete Maldonado. Zach and Rashid examine how the company figures out the necessary elements to build new meat snacks and maintain their original ones. Rashid also discussed how the e-commerce success story also picked the proper retail locations to grow its audience and create a new channel for Chomps. That's just a handful of the topics we touch on during this conversation. So take a listen to Zach and Rashid.
Yeah, Rashid, starting with you, I know you've been one of the co-founders and started this. Tell me how you, what drew you to Chomps, and Zach, then you can kind of go in there as well, but what kind of drew you into this product and what it's turned into?
Yeah, I mean, So Pete originally had an idea, and he's the type of guy, when he has an idea, he executes on it. So he had met a local organic processor when he was living in Chicago at the time. And his thought was, you know, why can't I take the Omaha Steaks concept and make a grass-fed, grass-finished, non-GMO version of that business, i.e. like ButcherBox. When we did it, we realized that like shipping frozen at scale was very challenging, and we always wanted to bootstrap the company and not have to raise money. So like, we couldn't figure out a way to do it. So Pete had this idea, me and him met and, kind of partnered together. And that was the initial business. It was actually called Logic Meat Locker. But we pivoted within 3 to 4 months to what today is Chomps.
Yeah. And Zach, when did you come on and realize the vision of what they started on?
Yeah, I joined Chomps a little over 3 years ago now. Prior to that, I worked in the food space, a large CPG brand for about 6 years. Loved the organization, but just didn't have the pride around what we were making, right? I kind of shifted into nutraceuticals for a while. That aligned a little bit more with what I was doing, but then got the opportunity to speak with Rashid and Pete and just chat through their vision around making a healthier meat snack and where they were currently at and what they wanted to grow the business to. And it just got me super excited. I saw that runway there based off of what they communicated to me and the opportunity just within the operations space, which I have an engineering background and all about problem solving and trying to figure things out. So that's what excites me, and being able to see the opportunity there to kind of bring that skill set to the team was something that I look back on all the time now and couldn't be happier with the decision that I made to come over to Chomps, because it's met those expectations and exceeded them in so many ways. Comes with a lot of firefighting and stress at times, but it all pays out in the end and you get to see your impact, which is really fun.
Yeah, I'm sure. And before we started, having 50 people, you know, you probably wear a lot of hats. You're doing a lot of different problem solving. Rashid, take me through how it's developed over the last 10 years where you guys have gotten to this point. I know e-commerce has always been where you guys started, and now it's moved into a multi-channel play for you guys.
Yeah. From when we thought about growing the team, I think if you look at where we're at from a revenue perspective, we are significantly understaffed. There's a metric where they typically say one FTE full-time employee, two every $1 million in sales. Like, we are so far below that, even at the 50. But while we want it, we always think strategically around when is the right time to bring in a full-time employee versus leveraging third parties and strategic partners. Like, by no means was it Pete and I just figuring everything out. I mean, we had right. people and resources doing it, but we were very cautious about when we brought a full-time person in. Before Chomps, I did strategy and management consulting with a firm whose roots were in bankruptcy and restructuring. So I saw so many times companies that were built a certain way based on short-term thought versus like that long-range plan. So what we wanted to do is we never wanted to be in that situation, kind of like the tech bubble right now. We are seeing all these massive layoffs because they built a company in a certain way, thinking that the business would continue at a certain pace, and it didn't materialize. So we've always been cautious about the way we hire. Again, Zach would probably tell you that is a bit slower than what it should be, because it does put a lot of burden on the team because it stretches the bandwidth, and we're trying to get a little bit better about it. And hiring, you know, people and culture resources, HR resources to help us really man some of the work we're doing. I mean, hiring 14 people since December was a massive undertaking, but we brought in an amazing VP of people and culture that was really able to help us get there and not take shortcuts on the people that we bring in. That's the other thing, is we think a lot about the Chomping culture and core values. When we hire, we think about it in two ways. One is, can they do the job? Right? That's binary. And then the other is, do they fit into the culture? There's a lot of folks that can do the job well, but wouldn't necessarily work well in the Chomps culture. There's other folks that could fit the do job, may like fit the culture really well, but maybe they're not going to be the best at the job. But sometimes we'd even explore those resources because we can see, is there an opportunity to train, to develop, to get them there? The culture and core value piece is really tough because I think the type of person we're looking for can operate in this environment, which is challenging. I mean, it's not your typical 9 to 5. Zach mentioned, I mean, every day there's going to be firefights, and those folks that can kind of think with a clear head, continue to have positivity and understand like and see the end goal. So I think over the years, you know, we gradually grew the team. I think from 2018 to 2018, we finished the year at about 6 people. Then we added a couple more and got to about 15. Then it was about 20. And then we were between 20 to 30 through the end of last year. And it's now at the scale we're at, we just need to build, and it's across all of the functions. So finance and accounting, operations, marketing, sales, people at the executive level, at the admin level. We're just trying to bring folks in across all the different functions to make sure that we have the right type of bandwidth and skill set to keep moving the company forward.
Right. And I know one of the things when you are scaling, and you've put a lot of thought into this, is now making this move into retail a little bit. What's been going on about that being another beneficial step for you guys? Because I know you've put the time in, developed the brand online, and then now this seems to be a well thought out step that you're taking now.
Yeah, and the way that Pete and I think about it is, we always want to make sure that brand awareness is ahead of distribution. So what I mean by that is, you need to make sure that your product is on the shelf where the right type of consumer will gravitate towards that product. Because if it's not, then it forces you to overinvest in marketing or trade spend. And so, again, we think a lot about unit economics and trying to build the business profitably, where we wouldn't want to necessarily go into a channel or a retailer where the consumer doesn't get it, and we have to invest in marketing or promos or BOGOs or whatever the deal is to get them to try. Once they try the product, we're going to get them. It's great tasting. It checks all the boxes. But what we're doing is, we want to find the consumers already leaning in the right direction. And so you're right in that we started in e-commerce. We were very fortunate to get Trader Joe's in 2016, which was our first exposure to retail. And when we got Trader Joe's, you know, it put a lot of eyes on the product, and we could have very easily quickly grown our retail distribution. But Pete and I, we decided that, like, let's be the best Trader Joe's partner for the next 2 years. Let's focus on how do we scale the business. Because when we first got that first purchase order, I mean, it was a significant increase in volume. And so we didn't even know if our infrastructure could support it. And so we really, and we put a lot of pressure on our co-manufacturing partner to get there. And, you know, I remember him telling me no probably a dozen times before I finally convinced him to take on the additional volume. And thankfully, you know, he our visions aligned where we got him there. But if we continue to put too much pressure at that point, you know, we probably wouldn't be here today. So we focused on Trader Joe's for 2 years, continued to grow e-commerce, continued to grow brand awareness. And then once we got into Whole Foods, into Fresh Thyme, into Sprouts, into Meijer's, into Walmart, the consumer was already kind of ready for it. They already kind of sort of heard about Chomps. We still have a lot of work. Like household penetration is between 3-4%. So more often than not, people are not going to know what Chomps is, but it gets us exciting because it means that we got a lot more work to do.
Yeah. And starting with Trader Joe's, you have such a loyal group of people. They go back there constantly. I mean, I'm sure that helped get the word out a lot of, hey, we're here and we're seeing the same people who are interested in the product over and over again too.
Yeah. I mean, the Trader Joe's consumer is a fantastic consumer. And I would also say, in addition to brand awareness, what Trader Joe's is, their focus on quality, it far exceeds most other retailers. And so that's all we knew. So we built our company with the expectation that retail quality expectations have to be at the Trader Joe's level. So it's always a blessing is that, and Zach can speak more about it, is like our quality program is top notch because we thought that's what it was needed across all wholesale accounts, where I think you have a little bit more flexibility. You know, I think typically you can do a 2-3% spoilage where there's an expectation, but we target like, you know, 0.05% spoilage because we're, you know, our quality controls are so high, and it's really a testament to what we learned working with Trader Joe's. I mean, they are, let's say, a pain, but it's because they care a lot about the consumer and they want to make sure that not only is it quality, but it's consistent. And the consistency, they don't want it to necessarily come from preservatives and certain chemicals that may be needed to drive the same thing every time.
For sure. And yeah, I wanted to get into quality assurance a little bit. And I know, Zach, that can kind of be some of your stuff. Before we do that, though, tell us mm-hmm. a little bit about sourcing of the meat snack product, where you guys go about finding the right ones to put your product on the shelf then.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. If you've listened to prior times when I spoke, we always say is Pete and I didn't have experience in food and retail and CPG, but we just hit our 11th year anniversary. So now I can't really say that because I have been doing this for quite some time. But we did take a crash course in the USDA and understand how it works. So the first step in sourcing was like finding someone that could make the product. And so we bought all the sticks on the market. We found a single co-man and we really leaned on them and grew with them. We now have three different manufacturing partners in place. We have a unique approach where we use a third-party manufacturer, but we own the packaging line. And we maintain it because we found from a quality perspective, that's where quality is lost through changeovers on the packaging lines. So with every single one of our facilities, we have anywhere from 1 to 2 or maybe 3 multivac lines that are owned by Chomps. And then from an ingredient perspective, over the years, we got smarter around, you know, the co-man helping to develop the recipe, to us fully owning the recipe, to us fully understanding the manufacturing process, and then working on actually sourcing the underlying ingredients. We always sourced the protein ourselves and the branded packaging, but then we would lean on the co-man when it came to the ingredients and the casings and certain other inputs. But now we're getting smarter around like sourcing that ourselves too, to make sure that we drive value, we make sure we continue to level up the attributes and the specifications of those items. But our biggest sourcing, I guess, focus is always on our proteins. So beef is, we source a lot of our 85 beef trim, and then it's turkey thighs. And then also we have some venison trim for our venison stick.
Mm-hmm. Zach, anything in there with your role of how you work with Rashid and everybody else in the company about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're constantly in conversation with all of our partners, right? About it. We can kind of go back to the QA process a little bit. We take that we take that initiative on ourselves to actually do a QA process of all the sticks prior to them getting out to consumers so that we can catch any defects and things and circulate that back to our co-manufacturers, not only to make make our products better, but make their processes better, right? To try to mitigate that in the beginning versus it getting all the way to the consumer, right? Those are always lagging indicators when you get consumer complaints. So trying to mitigate those as much as possible and working with those co-mans to continually optimize our product, right? And we're constantly learning with them. We have weekly calls with them to chat through any challenges that have come up, any new products that we're trying to launch, how those tests went, making sure that we're getting smarter about the product. As Rashid mentioned, we've, you know, just myself in the last 3 years have learned so much about meat snacks. I wasn't in meat prior. I was in an FDA environment. So learning about that meat, but now as we're scaling up the team, right, bringing in these very smart individuals that have been doing it for a long time to continue to make us better on how to test our product, how to do sensory on our product, to really understand what the key drivers are in there, so that we can have that full loop conversation, not only with the co-manufacturers, but also our protein suppliers, our seasoning suppliers. If we want to get involved with all of our other ingredients, right, that our co-mans are purchasing for us or on behalf of us, we have direct connections with each of them as well to try to understand how can we continue to make Chomps the best product possible for our consumers in market.
Yeah. And having the full control of the packaging was really interesting, Rashid. I thought, and that when I've seen your product out in retail, I think that's probably why we see it, because you guys are always in control of that a lot of times. Is that something that you really noticed in when you've grown the business? Like, yeah, man, we're able to control the messaging on the product and everything like that.
I think we didn't start doing that until I think it was 2018 or 2019. So, I mean, it was a 6-year run trying to figure out, making a lot of mistakes before we really started dialing it in. And we went through a packaging refresh where the packaging you see now on the shelf, like that was a big unlock in how it pops off the shelf, how, you know, the film construction, the film, like it just feels premium. And there was a lot that went into it. And part of it was the packaging line and the cutoff that's used. It's pretty unique in the, if you compare it to the other sticks, because there was a kind of a standard size that was out in the market. And we really took a unique approach to make sure that, one, that it stands out from a branding perspective, but there's a lot of quality components that are also integrated in that final packaging that helps us make sure we deliver a consistent quality product every time.
Right.
One interesting thing though is, like, I think if you think about where we're focusing on sourcing, in addition to just keeping up with the business, it's also figuring out how do we create automation, optimizations, and ability to continue to scale. I mean, when Zach joined, we were producing anywhere from, say, 200,000 pounds to 500,000 pounds a month. We're doing well over 1 million pounds a month now, and we're going to probably 2x that by in the next 12 months. And so when you start thinking about it, the way you produce when you're doing a couple 100,000 pounds to when you're doing a couple 1 million pounds, it's different. It's materially different. And, you know, a lot of people just think that, you know, you're going to get better pricing with economies of scale. But when you're producing at this scale, it starts shutting a lot of doors, because there's only so many folks that can supply at that level and that scale. So that's where, you know, we're starting to get faced with different challenges, and the team's, you know, embracing it, and we're continuing to level up and bring folks in that continue to get Zach and I smarter about operations and manufacturing. And one of the new challenges as we get deeper into this retail landscape is pack outs or builds, right? You have to take the stick and you have to put it into a tray, or you have to build a pallet, or you have to have this other. And it's now almost creating a whole nother need for manufacturing facilities, not making the product, but creating the end kind of retail. It's a lot easier to manage.
Yeah, exactly. I was really interested when I looked at it. Obviously, you guys focus mainly on beef meat snacks, but, you know, going into turkey, going into venison, was that something that the consumer wanted? Was it something that you guys wanted to to look at and try when you know you guys are going to grow a little more? What goes through that process of wanting to try as many new flavors, try as many new meats? What goes into all that too?
The venison launches, there's another brand out there that did a lot of bison and venison and more of the game. So we thought, like, let's see if this resonates with our customer. And that was really the catalyst. And we ended up creating a really tasty stick that it's not gamey like some venison products. We actually, the second ingredient is grass-fed beef fat, which helps deliver a really good flavor. So that was really just an idea Pete and I had. We launched that in 2017. And you know, it does well. It's definitely not in our top five items. There's a loyal following for the folks, but we wanted to see, it was also a challenge for ourselves. Could we launch a different protein? Turkey was, we wanted to launch a poultry stick, and we actually initially launched a chicken stick. It was called Kickin' Chicken, but we realized that chicken is a very challenging protein to make when you're not using sugar. So we ended up, it sold well, but like the way it aged, we didn't love it. It discolored because we also use a clear casing. So it discolored, it just kept getting lighter, and it just didn't, it wasn't a quality product that we could really scale. So we started doing more work on turkey, and we were able to really nail an amazing turkey, a base formula that is kind of what's used for all of our turkey recipes now. And it was a little bit of, kind of wanting to add another protein, but also talking to Trader Joe's, they really wanted to have a poultry offering. And so, you know, that's where we launched it. And I think now we have three turkey recipes and there's some more innovation underway.
Okay. Yeah, Zach, take me through a little bit about that on your side when you're looking at new flavorings, new meat snacks. What goes on your mind when you're trying to execute a lot of that stuff?
Yeah, so we've got an awesome brand and marketing team that, you know, really pays attention to the space and understands where kind of some empty spots are for us to go play in, right? And they'll come forward with ideas around, you know, it'd be awesome if we could, like our most recent one, like a taco flavor, if we could figure out a way to do that. And myself and our R&D lead work with our seasoning suppliers to understand what's capable on their end, to provide us with different types of seasoning blends that we can potentially throw in. It's a lot easier, as Rashid mentioned, we have like a base recipe, right? Our original beef and our original turkey that we can kind of play off of from a flavor profile perspective. So when it's within those when it's within those proteins, it's pretty easy to try to just play around and see what we can make work. We'll run small test batches with our co-manufacturers to understand kind of the overall flavor once it's cooked through, because you can taste the seasoning right at a diluted level to try to understand, but you don't really understand it fully until it's cooked and all the way packaged through. So we'll do, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5 iterations of product before we're really comfortable kind of taking it out and testing it in market. Sometimes even more than that, if it's a more challenging flavor profile. But it's a lot of fun to work with the co-manufacturers just to understand what the size of the prize is there and how well we can make the stick. And we just keep iterating it until we are very comfortable across the entire organization. That I would say that's one of the fun things about being the size of an organization, right, is we get to send it out pretty much to the entire team and get a pretty good understanding of how the market will react to it by just, you know, soliciting feedback from our own individual team.
Yeah, I was going to ask Rashid about that too. I'm sure R&D has changed quite a bit since it was just you and Pete or a handful of people when you look at this stuff now.
Yeah, I mean, so we have an innovation director of innovation. He came from one of the big guys making a very well-known stick that everyone knows. And he's really quarterbacking innovation. If you look at Chomps as a brand, you would be like, these guys don't innovate. They just have a stick and there's a beef one, a turkey one, and a venison one. The brand is simple by design, because the other thing is like, we're not going to innovate just to innovate. we talk a lot about it, but when we really bring something to market, there needs to be a purpose for it. We need to make sure that it adds incrementality. There's no cannibalization on shelf. It could potentially bring in a new consumer or cohort. So, you know, we've been thinking a lot and working a lot on various innovations to think about how do we overall grow our portfolio and our consumer household penetration and awareness. And so, I mean, even a couple of weeks back, we had our first innovation summit where, you know, a curated group of individuals from the team came to Chicago, and it was a half day session. It was awesome to really just ideate the art of possible. And so, you know, we got the output from that, and we are working on a lot of different things. I think the way we think about it is almost, if you think about Apple, you know, Steve Jobs had a ton of innovation that was just on the shelf, and he brought it out when it was the right time to do that. And he wasn't just launching when he needed to, right? It was very timed and strategic. So we're trying to be very deliberate about it, because I think if you think of some of our the other folks in the space, they start with jerky, then they launch a stick, then they launch bites, then they launch pork rinds, and then they launch bone broth. It's just, but for us, like, I think we don't need, we can grow through depth in our account and growing additional points of distribution. And that's how we're growing the business. We want to make sure that we continue to grow it the right way. And then when we do launch innovation, we can launch it through that existing infrastructure and hopefully add real incrementality to make sure we continue to grow at the pace that we are.
Yeah, it's an interesting and clear vision to hear about, because you, trying to figure out the best way to say this, you already have what you have established, but in order to keep everybody focused and fresh, you've got to have this innovation part too. I think that's a really interesting way of how you guys are going about it, if I've characterized that the right way, I guess.
No, the thing is, like, innovation is either going to do amazingly well or it's going to fail. And the failures can really hurt the brand. And the likelihood of like a home run, I mean, it's hard. It's the fact that we hit a home run with our stick format. You know, we can't expect every time we launch something, it's going to do that. So we are being, and you think if you talk to me and Pete, we're very different. Pete is very execution focused. And so that tension is good, where I'm challenging him to really think about when is the right time. But it served us well, where we haven't necessarily got any black eyes from launching things that didn't make sense and didn't resonate with the consumer. But we are working on some exciting things. And I think in the next couple of years, you'll see Chomps, you know, because we view Chomps as a better for you snacking platform. We have this signature brand of snack sticks, but we believe we have permission to launch additional products. And we're just really honing in on what the next product will be.
Right. And one of the other things I noticed you guys did is you're changing some initiatives too, with the land of market thing that came up a few weeks ago. How did that go about? I'm guessing regenerative agriculture is probably something you thought about, but it's becoming needed to be more recognized, I guess, throughout every part of food, beverage, all the industries. How did you go about finding that partnership with that?
So, I mean, it's interesting, because when we think about sourcing, we're already doing a lot of the right things, but we're not necessarily promoting it. I mean, when you think about the USDA and what they allow you to put on the package, they're very strict, and rightfully so. I think in some cases, if you think about other snack brands where it's just FDA regulated, I think sometimes the claims that they can put on the package is not as loose as what the USDA allows us to do. So we're already doing a lot of regenerative, pasture raised. Like, I mean, we're buying the highest quality proteins that we can find, but the problem is sometimes the farmers aren't necessarily doing the right paperwork to be able to get it to validate. So, you know, Pete and I have spent time in Australia, where most of our beef is sourced. We've seen the practices, and it's all rotational grazing. They're working hard to make sure that it's carbon neutral, and so a lot of our suppliers have certain programs and certifications. But we thought it was more important to partner with an independent third party like Land to Market that's actually measuring the soil and continuing to educate us. Because sometimes, you know, our partners are going to position their program in a certain way. But we wanted to make sure that there was no bias, right? We wanted to make sure that we can challenge them to say, like, hey, there's still a gap in your program. And what about this? And what about that? So Land to Market, from our perspective, are very well educated on the regenerative landscape and not only being aware of it and aware of the partners, but also being able to go and test soil and understand what the true impact is on the environment. So that's why we partnered with them. It's not necessarily changing the way we're sourcing. It's just continuing to educate us as we get smarter about how we should be sourcing and what requirements we should be asking of our farmers and our supply partners.
Definitely.
I would say too, with
go ahead, Zach.
We as a brand, right? We're focused on kind of like whole animal utilization, right? We're a little bit of a byproduct of people buying primals and things to that nature, right? So the other exciting thing about Land to Market is that education, not only to us, but also to a consumer, and partnering with them to continue to educate consumers so that you build out the regenerative understanding to continue to build the amount of farmers that are really following these practices. So the supply chain within that space continues to grow as we continue to scale up is really important as well.
Okay. Just a couple more, guys. I appreciate the time so far. We could go on and on. I'm always fascinated on this stuff, but I want to be respectful of your time. Zach and Rashid, you can hop in here too. I was curious, since you've been with some other major food companies before, what have you found when you're at a smaller scale place now, 50 people, what do you do to stay competitive in the meat snack business when there's so many other offerings going on? How do you look at that standpoint from you guys?
I think Rashid probably said this best a little bit earlier in our discussion, is once somebody tries a Chomps, they're sold, right? There's been so much effort and focus on making the best snack stick that you can possibly make, so that there's zero doubt once somebody tries it that they're going to love our product, and continuing to focus around that, and then working with our marketing and brand teams, right, to make sure that we are getting that trial to those individuals. So once they try it, we have a customer for life. And then on our end, as we talked about with the QA process, is making sure that we're constantly inspecting and continuing that feedback loop to continue to make our product as best as it can be, is the difference in focus, I think, with Chomps than I've seen in other jobs that I've worked, which is more focused around kind of that margin improvement. It's really that quality focus first, and then how can we continue to improve financials and things after that. But we know if we don't have a great quality product, Chomps isn't what it is today.
And it also has to be consistent. I think that's the other thing, is the consumer keeps coming back because they know it's going to taste the same way and it's going to be the same experience. You know, at our size, it allows us to be a little bit more nimble and make certain decisions. Like, Zach would love if we were to add some sort of sugar to our product, because it would just make it a lot easier as far as hitting our critical control points, the active water and the pH. There's certain things where it's like, we signed up for a very hard formulation because it's what our consumer wants. And so yeah. If you think of a larger organization that has a lot more margin pressure, you know, they may be forced to make certain decisions because it's going to help them from a margin perspective. We are small enough where we continue to deliver healthy gross margin, but with a more challenging product to make. And that's another reason when you say, like, it's a very competitive space, but if you carve out the folks that are making the product the way we are, it really slims out. And there's been, you know, I would say, a decent amount of folks kind of at our level, but it's over the last 3 years, the challenges that folks have faced, you really saw it thin out. And Chomps is now being, you know, when we look at the MULO data, you know, it's the big guys, and then Chomps is right there in the top 3 to 5, which it's pretty crazy to see. I mean, if you think about, you know, where we've come over the last 11 years, but it's really around staying consistent and delivering a quality product. I think the last thing I'll add is we've created an emotional connection with our consumer, you know, by starting in these trending diet tribes. If you think about Whole30 and Paleo and Keto. And so anyone who's done a diet, at least me personally, all I think about is what I can't have. So if I find a snack that's convenient, that tastes good, that's guilt-free because it checks the box, I'm hooked. And so even when I'm on the diet or not on the diet, I'm going to gravitate towards that product. And that's what we've seen from our consumer, is a lot of folks were introduced because they were in this diet or this limitation, but they found, oh wow, Chomp saved me. And then when they switched back to the normal, their normal lifestyle, it just became part of their routine. So it's important, like most of our consumers, if you look at our reorder rates and repeat purchases, it's at another level compared to that of our consumer, because we've created that emotional connection and we continue to deliver this tasty quality product.
Perfect. Well, Zach, Rashid, I could talk about meat snacks for a lot longer, but I'll let you guys go. I appreciate the time, guys, today on the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, no, Ryan, we appreciate it. This is awesome.
Make sure to check out the latest stories from the monthly print edition and online at meatpoultry.com. Make sure to follow us on social media on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, all by searching at Meat Poultry. And if you like what you heard, please leave a rating and review. It really helps us. All right, that's it for this time, folks. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.